And it's 7 o'clock. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And this is the continuation of Aboriginal Voices right here on, that's right, CFRC 101.9 FM. Is that good?
That sounds good.
Is that fine, Doug?
Yeah. We know where we are. Do we know what time it is?
Yeah,
did
7.
You say PM or did you say just 7?
If the folks can't work that out.
Well, you know, some people are listening to us from way around the world.
From Guam?
Could be.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because you can hear
CFRC. I don't think they're listening to us from Guam.
You can hear CFRC by going to
CFRC. Maybe Japan.
.ca. Go to the listen button and you can hear us live.
But, yeah.
Slightly delayed if it's going around the world.
Would be nice if it was Japan, though.
You can. Northern part, maybe not.
Do you ever watch any of those, like, you do YouTube and then maybe something pops up like vending machines from around the world?
No.
And so you say to yourself, I want to know about that. Well, you should. You should, Douglas. You need to know about these things. They have vending machines for just about everything.
Back up. What's a YouTube?
Oh, gosh, Doug. You just...
All right. I'm just kidding you.
Now, were you around when the automat was a thing?
Yes. Are you talking about an automat for a car or an automat for doing your clothes?
I think it was an automat, and or like it was a cafeteria, and you put your quarters in to get the, I don't know, your change, and you pull a sandwich out.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe you pull out a...
I do recall one of those.
Maybe you pull out a pie,
and
then like you buy, I don't know if you buy it or rent it. I guess you rent it, a cup, and you can go and get the coffee out of the... No? You don't?
Yeah, I remember something.
See, I don't. I only vaguely remember it, and I think it's mostly from movies.
Oh.
There is a nice little YouTube documentary, like a guy on YouTube made a documentary about, and I think they're called automats.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, it's like the whole thing, and he's like, well, you know, the only time I ever seen these was in the movies from the 30s. Turns out in the 50s they were starting to phase them out.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my trip down memory lane.
Okay. So
but Earth Day, Earth Day at Confederation Park, Doug.
Oh, good. Yes. Tomorrow is Earth Day, but Confederation Park is going to
be... Oh, wait a minute. It's on April 26th. Saturday. April 26th is not Earth Day?
Well, the official Earth Day is tomorrow.
Is it?
April 26th. Oh, it's Sunday. Yeah. So this thing is happening in Kingston. What is it about?
Sunday. It's a location, Confederation Park. It's a free family-friendly event. Features local vendors, community booths, drumming and dancing, organized by partners, including the Kingston Native Center and the Language Nest and Sustainable Kingston. So it's going to be up at the Confederation Park?
That's right across from City Hall.
Oh, over here?
Yeah. Right on the water.
Oh, no. Not down over there with the funny U thing.
Yes.
Gateway, like that.
McDonald's.
Like the, yeah, that's on there. But that Gateway to St. Louis thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arch. Confederation Park, date Sunday the 26th, 1 till 5. Community booths, educational speakers, interactive activities and performances. So it says to get involved. Interested in participating, you can submit an expression of interest to the organizers. Maybe not now, but for next year. Maybe they don't want you to be interested this year. Let's see. Sustainable Kingston Spring Pitch In. Doug.
Yes.
Do you want to pitch in? See, I don't know why I want to say pinch.
Pitch in is like you can go and pick up things and then throw it in.
So you're going to go and pick up other people's trash.
Well, that's out and around the world.
That's nice. So, like, there's people out there that just throw it out. And then all these do-gooders, they go and pick it up for them. How is that?
Well,
how is that okay?
If you walk along and you see something and you say, maybe you want to have...
Do you get that stick with a nail in it?
No, well, you could do that.
Or I would do it if I had a stick with a nail in it.
Yeah, you would go around and...
Like a spear. Yeah, I would do that and then throw it in my little gunny sack.
Ooh.
And put it in there and psh, gone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but people do that. I mean, out and about in our neighborhood, people go out and pick up from recycling that didn't get picked up because the wind may have blown it out of the recycling can, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I don't think that's what happens. Like kids, some bad kids, they just, they drag, we'll just throw it out the window.
Community.
Are you sure?
The wind.
I think they're all in everybody's community.
Do you know the other creatures that do it? Crows.
Yeah.
Now you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
All right.
The crows would get into, our refuse and, before the guy would come and take it.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was dogs. Whose dog is that? I'm going to...
Oh, no.
Because you have to go out there. You have to...
Neighborhood dogs.
No.
Okay.
No, wait. Am I done my story?
No.
No. So then I was like, I'm going to watch for that dog. And if there's a dog out, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to, do something. Mm-hmm. Yell at it. Or maybe more. And, get pictures to show the neighbors. Because they'll care about that. But no, turns out it was crows. Crows would...
They're the culprit.
It's like, oh... I guess really I can't do anything about the crows. So.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. Anyways, so that was that. That's my little story for today.
Okay.
Are we ready to be done?
No.
Oh, you want more?
If you want.
That's the spring pitch in. No, it's the spring pitch in. Their sustainable Kingston booth.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Center Farmer. Oh, there. That's. I'll go to that. Memorial Center Farmers Market. Where is that?
I think that I'm not sure if the market is over at
York Street.
Oh, York Street. 99 York, or is it
303
York Street.
It's a market in the barn every Sunday from November through April.
Mm-hmm.
9 till 1.
Oh, okay. I do have a song ready for you.
Do we? Wonderful.
Yeah, you all set? And then we have a couple of short pieces that we're going to share with you. One of them is this time of the year people go out doing birding. And so, you go out and you listen to what birds are in the neighborhood and who's building a nest where and that sort of thing. Well, Joe is going to come along and share a little bit about birds and teach us a few Anishinaabe words for birds and observation. Okay?
Yes.
And we have some music to go with it. So here we go.
Yeah. Got a whole lot of culture, baby, this ain't a new thing. Monet's on the roster, we forever like Wu-Tang. With the picture we painted, now we shining like Vegas. Put the X on the papers, we them history makers. I give
praise to the most high, to hold me down at showtime. We came up from the coastline, we did it with no cosign. No stopping at the goal line, I'm here to take the whole nine. My name across the skyline, the city is mine.
So tell them why, boy. Big drip, color bloodshed. We about to paint the town red. I'm just saying that's what Unc said. We about to paint the town red. We about to paint the town red. We about to paint the town red. We about to paint the town red.
Yeah.
We about to paint the town red.
I'm Nietzsche from BC, do with big La Coliseums. Family business way since BC, take a back from museums. Now look, mama, I'm on TV, went from AM to the PM. Keep the channel when you see him. It's from my S and our K's. We went from phase to the braids. We found our ways through the maze. Y'all prayed that this was a phase. They throwing salt on my name. I had some pepper to taste to make you red in the face. Don't let that go to waste. Now I'm a rock star. Nietzsche till the wheels fall off the car. Bougie Boulevard. Ooh, grease on caviar. No, we got it by the jar. Know my word is bond. Girl, you gotta let the beauty creator put the paintbrush on. Okay, that's me.
Okay, that's me.
Holy, you're deadly.
I done knew that already. Got a foot in the door. We taking over the floors, then digi design. My Nietzsche going time forward, so please don't hold your applause. The illest Nietzsche awards. I come from the land, baby. I can give you a tour. I got that
big drip, color bloodshed. We about to paint the town red. I'm just saying that's what Unc said.
To famous and back to practically hated. I've been rapping like Shady, I swear my mom think I'm crazy. Took 5 shots in a minute, I feel like Tracy McGrady. We turned up from down under, when I'm out with my cousins. We put on for the land, that was never discovered. We've been talking that, and now we in the discussion. We've been litty, we turned up at the function. Been ignoring your phone calls, though my Nietzsche we buzzing. Feel like all of a sudden, we've been popping like bubbles. When you royal like Rumble, I swear it's hard to be humble. Kids from the rest out here calling you uncle. We've been cooling, we've been chilling, we've been thinking about these millions. We've been sipping on this liquor, we made out to be these villains. I guess they forgot that we only civilians. I guess they forgot snotty nose for the children.
That's what it is, man. Big drip, color bloodshed. We about to paint the town red. I'm just saying that's what Unc said.
Wouldn't it be great to eat gourmet food from some of Kingston's top chefs all in one place? Well, you can. If you attend Savor Spring, a culinary experience on Saturday, May 2nd, for an evening of exceptional food, local talent, and community spirit that will make a meaningful impact for students across KFLNA. Savor Spring, a culinary experience, brings together 6 of Kingston's standout chefs for an immersive dining event supporting the Food Sharing Project, a local charity that ensures local students have full access to nutritious breakfast, lunch, and snacks at school. Guests will enjoy interactive stations from Aquaterra, Baja Craft Kitchen, Bella Bistro, Kudo Catering, Crave Coffee House, and Days on Front, along with a welcome cocktail, raw bar, local wine, live music, and a silent auction. It's a rare chance to experience the creativity of 6 local restaurants under one roof while supporting students in the community. We are so proud to be part of Savor Spring, a night where Kingston's best kitchens come together for something bigger than food, says Chef Chris Kudo of Kudo Catering. That's the vision we stand behind. Good food, real impact, one table. Tickets are on sale now and going fast. Visit foodsharingproject.org/savorspring to grab yours today.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers, and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our programming manager, Alex Fernandez, via email at programs@cfrc.ca for more information, or visit our website at cfrc.ca/volunteer and sign up today.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
A Day to Listen.
I'm Mason Abbey, one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023, and I'm here with Sandra Laurent, who is an Indigenous artist and choreographer and founding artistic director of Red Sky Performance. Her mission is to promote Indigenous culture and perspectives through art. Sandra, it's good to talk to you again. We talked recently, but roles reversed.
I know. I love how the tables are turned.
I have you in the hot seat. I have some questions here, but there was one thing from the last time we talked that actually kind of stuck with me too, you know. So I think I wanted to kind of maybe start there. You know, I know you've been to many places around the world with Red Sky, you know, sharing Indigenous art and culture. But there was one thing you said to me. You said, you know, you've been around the world, you know, as far as humans can travel. But the longest journey was from your nation, Temagami, to Toronto. And so I was hoping you can tell me about that.
Yeah, that's so true. When I think about travel and, you know, coming from Temagami, which is 1,600 islands and 3,200 kilometers of shoreline and 500 people when I grew up. So more islands than people. And when I went to the University of Toronto, I trekked out, you know, and went off to Toronto by myself. And it was definitely the biggest psychological journey I have ever been on. Even though I've been to places like China and Mongolia and New Zealand and Australia and so forth, Iceland, you know, and but there's just something about leaving home for the first time and you're seeing and experiencing everything so differently. And everything was new. And I remember looking at all the buildings, and U of T is quite gorgeous. So I was admiring all sort of the wooden sculptures and the gargoyles and being sort of inundated with all this wonderful knowledge, I guess, in university. But, you know, nothing ever replaces home. And I was just home. In fact, I just arrived last night from home, and I was thinking, I was sitting on the shoreline, and I was thinking, you know, home is that sound through the poplar trees. It's that sound of the loon that I can hear in the distance. It's how the, you know, the sun hits the water and the glisten of that sort of light and the sound of the wind. Like, it's so sensorial. And that really is sort of, that is home to me. Even though I did have a, you know, sometimes when you wake up in the morning, you have one sentence in your head. I don't know if you experience that, but every once in a while I'll wake up and there'll be one sentence. And the one sentence said to me, "You are to Mi'kmaq Anishinaabe, and you are of the world." And I went, "Yeah, I'm of the world too. That's right." So, but yeah, it was hard, I have to say. It was not easy to go to Toronto, you know, and sort of navigate your way very differently than you do in a small town or on a reservation. Just the people you meet, and you sort of assume everybody is on the up and up, you know? You sort of assume everybody's telling the truth and everybody's good, and you have to kind of learn that's not always the situation. So you got to navigate differently,
Yeah, I totally understand that. You know, you came here to Toronto and now, you know, on your own, and then, you know, now you're traveling the world. You know, you've created and directed so many productions that can combine Indigenous storytelling with music and dance. Was that what led you to Toronto, or was that born out of being in Toronto? And, like, how did you find your calling for this type of art?
No, I think it was always there. I remember directing, you know, skits and with my cousins when I was 8, 9, 10 years of age. And so I was already sort of so-called directing there, and we had so much fun. And so I think it was always in me, and I always kind of knew I would travel. I remember I had maps in my room on my bedroom walls, and I would sort of trace them and say, someday I'm going to go there, and someday I'm going to go there. It was just there somehow. And but then you've got to summon up the courage to actually go to these places, you know. And I think travel makes you into a storyteller, because you go to all these places, and it's so awe-inspiring what you see, and the people you meet, and the music you hear, and the dances you see, and the culture that you get to sort of experience for a little while. It's really awe-inspiring, and it sort of makes you speechless. And then after a while, it turns you into a storyteller, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you've gone on to tell these stories in so many different parts of the world. How has other parts of the world taken in Indigenous culture and art? And you know, were the reactions different?
Yeah, that's a big question, really. When I started Red Sky Performance, I was always very interested in world Indigenous cultures. So I was always trying to go to, you know, Indigenous places like New Zealand, Australia, and Africa, and Mexico, and United States, of course, and Canada, across Canada. And so I was really interested in going into world Indigenous communities. I really believe that we belong everywhere, from mainstream world stages to an on and off switch in a school somewhere, you know, with two lighting cues on and off, you know, to the Kennedy Centers and to the, you know, World Olympics in Vancouver, Beijing, whatever it is. I, you know, when I first started, people would say to me things like, well, you know, Indigenous work seems to be a little bit, you know, I don't know if I want to program it. And I would say, well, why is that? And they'd say, because, you know, I had an Indigenous group or artist here, and it, you know, it was kind of, you know, wasn't very good. And then I'd say, well, so when you programmed a white artist, did you say after that, I'm not going to program any more white artists? And they would say, no. So you kind of had to work, and I'm sure you run across this, Asanabi, where you have to kind of like, you almost have to help them in a way to reimagine what Indigenous arts and culture could be, and that artists and audiences are actually going to just enjoy it. And in fact, they're hungry and thirsty for it, even if they don't know that. And once they experience it, they're like, oh my God, that was the best thing I've ever seen. I have never seen anything like that before. And it's really the opposite of what people were saying to me. We've really managed to go to so many places and sell out. You know, a lot of audiences have really experienced our work and standing on their feet, standing ovations, et cetera, et cetera. But so I've experienced actually the opposite as you have, which is, you know, this is phenomenal. This is amazing. But it was very different, I have to say, than when I started Red Sky 23 years ago. Yeah.
How have you found blending, you know, traditional and contemporary art? You know, has it become easier? And was there ever kind of, you know, a resistance to that from when you started to now?
Well, I think it's always been a blend. Mm. Even in traditional arts, it's a blend. So, for example, Jingle Dress Dance, when it first came onto the scene in a dream to a man or a woman, it's debatable, who, you know, which gender, in Lake of the Woods area, that was in 1920 something, that was considered contemporary. And then it caught on the healing dress dance, jingle dress, and then now it's traditional. So, you know, even in grass dance moves to this day, there will be traditional moves and there will be contemporary moves within the traditional form. So I don't sort of look at the traditional and contemporary in this binary way, but actually that they're really one and the same. They're a continuum. There's fluidity. We're a fluid people. Of course, there are traditional old style steps, old style moves, old style songs, but there's also this contemporary way of expressing things. And to your question, when I first started Red Sky, people would sort of expect, you know, feathers and beads and want that. And I can understand that, you know, if that's what media has been sort of, that's the brush that we've been painted with for so many years. But once they see and experience the contemporary form, I find they just want more of it. And it's come a long way in the last 20 years in terms of contemporary arts being accepted by Indigenous artists who want to foray into this contemporary place.
One of the things you guys were doing was going to these places to connect with other Indigenous communities in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And what was that like as far as, you know, Indigenous culture and arts in this country? I wouldn't say making a comeback, but getting more visibility, you know, is that something you were noticing in different parts of the world as well? And like, where does Canada and this country kind of stand in that?
I think you can almost go to any Indigenous community in the world and there's some sort of reflection, Indigenous reflection that you see, you know, whether it's through the humor, whether it's through the big laugh that Indigenous people have, whether it's through a worldview and a connection to land and the water and the sky and, you know, that incredible worldview that the world needs right now so badly. And the things that we sing about, the stories that we tell, there's lots of parallels. There's lots of commonalities. So you experience, and there's something in the eye, I have to say, no matter where you go, there's something that you just sort of see yourself reflected back, whether it's with Maori people or First Nations in Australia or Indigenous people in Mexico, or Navajo people, wherever you go. And that always feels like your home somehow, you know? So there's an identity there that you, there's something in common. Of course, there's differences too. And those differences are equally beautiful and compelling. I feel like in Canada, there's been an incredible resurgence in the last 10 years that is phenomenal, that is so exciting to see. And I know, you know, from our brothers and sisters in the United States, they sometimes say, we're a little bit jealous of you guys up in Canada, you know, because there's so much going on and there's such a build. But I think everywhere in the world, Indigenous people are growing and becoming, and I think social media had a lot to do with that in terms of making, you know, more well known what we do, what we think, who we are, and what we have to contribute to the world.
Are there any kind of experiences from these collaborations that kind of stand out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you have the collaboration right, there's nothing sweeter than that. It's so incredible. It's, you build a family, really. And the one that springs to mind immediately is with Mongolia. We did a piece called Tono, which was dance and live music. And it was, none of us could speak Mongol, and they couldn't speak English. So we had to find ways to communicate with one another. So we ended up sort of inventing our own language, our own jokes. And we became, I think, because we couldn't share the same language in a way, we became extremely close. And people were trying to come in, be part of sort of the language that we spoke, that we made up. And, you know, it's like what we were doing at the beginning, you know, we're already sort of sharing these things that, you know, no one else is going to understand, you know. And so it happened so quickly. And people would sort of stand and go, how do I get in there? And that collaboration continued for 7 years. We ended up going to the Beijing Olympics, World Expo Shanghai, Vancouver Olympics, UConn, Banff, you know, the Fleck Dance Theater here. And 7 wonderful years of working with these men and women, and half of them being from Inner Mongolia and Outer Mongolia.
Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that, yeah, when you first came here, you know, Toronto, you know, the biggest city in this country, and you were just so used to kind of having these conversations and having this trust, and then you kind of had to like, kind of learn that that's not the way it is maybe here. Have you found that kind of changing from then?
I used to sort of, when I went to university, I would meet one or two Indigenous people, and the school, university is so big, you never see them again. And there was no sort of First Nations center at that time. There is now, though. And I remember my humor, people wouldn't quite get my humor. So I'd have to kind of tweak it and adapt and then sort of, you know, figure out, okay, how this is quite not quite working. Or I would have expressions and they wouldn't get it. What do you mean by that? And so I'd have to sort of figure all those things out that were just, you know, things back home that people, you just say and people understand. Mm-hmm. I think you just kind of get from experience a little bit wiser. You read people a little bit better. Then, you know, you just learn how to sort of, for the most part, identify good people. And when you feel, and trust your gut, when you connect with certain people, and to feel, and to make more choices. Whereas before I was sort of, you know, kind of friends with everyone, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a great, wonderful way to be, but you can't quite be like that in a city, as a young woman especially. So you kind of have to adapt that and learn as you go along. And you get, and the wonderful things I surrounded myself, I was thinking about this morning, I don't know why, but I was thinking, I really surrounded myself with a lot of intelligent, articulate, energetic people, and especially women, like my classmates and my friends. I really surrounded myself with some people who made things happen without knowing it, you know? When I look at it in retrospect, and I also now in retrospect realize a lot of my friends too were Jewish, because there weren't a lot of Indigenous people, but there were a lot of Jewish people who were my friends. And I think that's because there were parallels between the shared experiences of Jewish people and First Nations. And unconsciously, I was kind of drawn to people who could understand our plight as Indigenous people. So, but I didn't know it at the time, you know, I didn't really even think about that until about 10 years ago. So, yeah. And then it was hard to go back home for a while, you know, because you'd be speaking differently now. And then you become very bicultural. So when I go home now, I speak a certain way, I'm a certain way, I'm definitely still Sandra. But then when I go back to a university setting, I just kind of tweak it a little bit, but it's still me, you know? It's just that they're all different aspects of ourselves, you know? And but the one thing I know is that no matter where you go in the world, you know, the Western canon is that you can never leave home. That's the famous line. And I think the Indigenous canon is actually home never leaves you, no matter where you go. So you take it wherever you go. Those stories, that whatever you have inside, you know, the spirit of land that you have inside, that's part of your spirit that you end up sharing with others. That's the things that audiences feel and why they're touched. They're touched by those other parts of yourself that you're sharing, and you may not even know it in the moment, like what you do.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, I can see how you came up in that group of people. You share a lot of the same traits as well. As you know, this interview is a part of a radio takeover for the National Truth and Reconciliation Day. And you know, sometimes I'm asked, you know, what does the word reconciliation mean to you? And for me, that kind of like throws me off because I feel like that could be pretty broad. You know, what does reconciliation mean in the context of just, you know, Indigenous artists having a seat at the table as well with other non-Indigenous artists?
That's a huge question, of course. Well, I'm going to echo what I hear from a lot of other artists, and I agree, is you have to speak the truth. You have to say what it was like, what it's like, and speak up. Speak up and speak out is, I think, you know, a really important thing about finding reconciliation, whatever that word means. The truth is first. There's a reason why they called it truth and reconciliation. I think there's all kinds of reconciliations. Right now in this world, I think reconciliation is not only human to human. It's human to the land. It's human to the water. It's human to animals. We're reconciling. It's a time of reconciliation and coming back as holistically as we can. And everybody wants that on some level. And so, you know, I wrote a book, a novel, just, I don't know, 11 months ago, called She Holds Up the Stars. And it's really for the mid-school reader. And it really is about a young girl coming to reconciliation, reconciling with her family, with where she's from, with creatures that she meets because she's 12 years of age, a boy. So like so many divides, there's so many walls that are set up. And the wonderful thing about children is they inadvertently climb over them and learn about one another. So I think of reconciliation as that, is the dissolving of these adult-made walls and boundaries and sort of dissolving those so that we actually see one another of who we are. I think that's a form of reconciliation too. But of course, the big reconciliation is, you know, the reconciliation with history. And as Indigenous people in Canada, so many Canadians still do not know the Indigenous history at all. And some of them don't even want to know it because it's painful. So that has to be, education is part of reconciliation, big part. And I really believe we got to start young, not with adults only, but start very young with children, because children are very, very capable of talking about reconciliation and aspects of reconciliation very, very young. So I think of those things when I think of reconciliation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, how can the arts, you know, be utilized to kind of push this forward?
Arts has a wonderful lift in it. There's a lift in arts that politics can't do. When you sing your song and when we dance our dances and tell our stories, people can hear it better. And it makes it easier for people to feel it, understand it, and have it go right into their heart and into their minds and have it rattle them up and shake them up a little bit, and hopefully a lot. And that's what arts does. There's a lift, and it's powerful. Art is powerful that way.
I think that sums it up perfectly. You know, I suppose, well, maybe not the final question, but, you know, I'm interested in Red Sky. You know, where did the name come from?
Red Sky are the first two words of my name, Misko Gijigat Kwe, Red Sky Eagle Woman. And so when I started Red Sky, I was thinking, what is a word? What's a name of something that's going to sort of be able to embrace everything, you know, that we want to do, whether that's dance, theater, music, storytelling, digital media, film, all of that. What's the name? And I thought, oh, Red Sky. Perfect. And people remember it, which is great. So that's where the name Red Sky came from.
Much easier to pronounce than Asin Abbey, I suppose.
yeah. But once they got it, they won't forget it.
So what's next for you?
Next, I'm actually going to go up, back up north to Tomogamy, and they want me to do a reading from my novel. And I was thinking about doing a reading and putting some music underneath it and reading it, making it sort of more multidisciplinary. And my novel will actually end up, we're going to be working with the Toronto Symphony Orchestra with the story in my novel as well. So that's one of the things that we're thinking about doing. We're putting Migas Underwater Panther, which is a piece that we just did. It sold out here in Toronto, sold out Kennedy Center, blah, blah, blah. And that'll be going back on tour as well and developing new shows. And we have Red Sky at Night happening at Canadian Stage as well. And anyway, lots on the go.
Amazing.
Like everyone else.
Yeah. So like, yeah, you left the community and, you know, you bring in the community to the world. Mm-hmm. When you go back, do you ever kind of bring the world to the community there, or is it more just to kind of be home and relax?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Yes, I do. Yeah, it's just like energy feeding energy in a way. You know, you go home and you get nourished and energized because of for me, it's the water and the trees and the rock and the wind and the night sky. And then sort of off I go. And then you get energized differently, you know, mm-hmm. in the world. And then you come back. And so it's kind of this, really you're just sharing your experience back and forth. Yeah. What about you? When you go back home, do you find that you bring the world back to your places where you grew up?
Yeah. I think when I go back, because it's, you know, not as frequent as I'd like it to be. Yeah. You know, I feel like there's every time there's just, yeah, definitely a lot of questions. What was this like? What was that like? So it's just like, yeah, you know, a lot of conversation, a lot of sharing. And it's always a good reflection point too, to be honest. You know, I think people in our lines of work, you can get really kind of tunnel vision where it's just like, oh, here's the next thing I need to do, next thing. And so sometimes it gets a little busy to kind of look back and see all the things that you did. So it's nice to have these conversations to share what you've learned, but also to reflect on what you learn is kind of what I like mm-hmm. about going back and taking time.
Yeah. I'm just so proud of everyone doing so well, including you. And I mean, I just met you, but I already feel so proud of you. And I'm so proud of everybody doing such wonderful work in Canada and onward and upward, you know? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's been an honor sharing space with you again, and I look forward to the next time as well.
Till the next time, yes.
Until next time.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation at daytolisten.ca.
Down, I'm holding my head up, holding it high. I'm keeping my back up, I'm keeping my back up against the wall. I'm holding my head up so I don't fall. No, it ain't too late, we ain't too far gone. 'Cause there's more love than hate, and there's more right than wrong. So won't you sit right here beside me? And rest your weary head, and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed. Taking the high road, putting the fight down. Taking the high road out of town. Taking my mind off, taking my mind off the fighting side. Walking away, walking the line. No, it ain't too late, we ain't too far gone. 'Cause there's more love than hate, and there's more right than wrong. So won't you sit right here beside me and rest your weary head, and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed.
beside me and rest your weary head and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed. And let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed.
I had the pleasure of joining Joe and a few others on Manitoulin Island last fall for a bit of a birding adventure. We also had Andres Jimenez with us. But we weren't just birding and hanging out with friends. There was a greater goal to this trip. Joe and Andres have been working together to find more ways to share Joe's knowledge, and one of those ideas brought us to the island. And that idea was tourism. Joe connected with Wiquemecong Tourism to see if their guides would be interested in learning more about birding with a special focus on the Anishinaabe language, and of course, they were on board. Wiquemecong Tourism operates in Wiquemecong First Nation in the more eastern part of Manitoulin Island, which is also where Joe grew up. In this episode, we're bringing you little pieces of audio from that trip. So picture a group of us birding in beautiful fall landscapes on Manitoulin Island. The leaves are just starting to change color, the tall, dry grasses are crunching underfoot, and yeah, crickets and grasshoppers galore. You'll mostly hear Joe sharing his vast knowledge about the birds that we're encountering, and occasionally you might hear Andres or one of the tour guides chiming in. In this first clip, Joe is explaining the name for chickadees.
Chickadee she is like, it's describing somebody who's hiding everything, like stuffing things away. Like when you have a fire, you use that stick and you're moving the fire around, you're burying some, bringing some out, and that's all the chickadee will do, is be burying everything, hiding everything, stuffing everything here and there. So the chickadee, it sounds like what he's saying, chickadee, but then it's also describing how he hides everything. Crows are really fun. We call them ondeg. Ondeg is describing a change that's happening, and I think it's talking to the role that crows play in indicating changes in the seasons.
Okay.
So they in the springtime they're all mobbing up, they're all loud, and they're super playful.
Yeah.
And that usually indicates that it's spring, the maple syrup is starting.
Yeah.
But then also their behaviors change in the fall, and they get super, super loud at the end of summer. And that's usually about when you start picking medicine, when you, like, from your garden or whatever it is, it's fall time. The green color changes. As soon as you hear in the fall or at the end of summer, all of the crows just going wild, that is, lots of things will change.
Hey, Joe, you mentioned something about blackbirds sneezing.
Yeah, they, as a family, well, I think that it's probably a name, just like for woodpeckers are papase. That's, I think, maybe more appropriately as a family name. Because each individual woodpecker has its own name, like meme for the undulation of the pileated and undulating flight pattern of the pileated, and moninguenes, the flicker that digs. And so I think jachakuno is like sneezers.
Why are they the sneezers?
Because when they, that's what all of the grackles and red-winged blackbirds, they have this sneeze that they do to call and
put their volume in their wings as well, right?
You can play a sound for us.
Exactly. So blackbird, right? Let's go to grackle.
Okay. I've never thought about that as a sneeze.
But they'll take a deep breath in before they sneeze. But each individual one, like Mesquanog is the red-winged blackbird, just talking about the red shoulders. and then
the other blackbird,
Sygnaq for the,
even if you didn't see the red head,
for the common grackle, just describing the way they group up together in flight.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've gotten close to hearing a name for a brown-headed cowbird.
Okay.
At the end of the week, I sat down with a couple of the tour guides to get their perspective on the whole experience. Here's Manny first, followed by Jack.
Hi, my name is Mandago Ozamek. I'm a tour guide for Wequamicon Tourism. Been a tour guide for maybe 4 years. This is my first time birding or doing anything that involves identifying birds, so it's been quite an experience.
Has it been challenging for you?
Yeah, it has. After kind of getting a little bit more information on all the different species and the families, even, is just a whole different world to explore. It's a lot to take in all at once, for sure.
What's been your favorite part of this experience?
I think the listening to the bird sounds. Like, even just this morning, I woke up and I could just hear all the different birds, and I'm just trying to piece it all together. So it's kind of lots more to discover. It's like playing a game almost.
Hey, so my name is Jack Rivers. I work with Wequamicon Tourism as a cultural tour guide.
So what do your tours typically look like?
A lot of our tours usually compromise of, again, our unseated journey, which is historical site stops. But we do have our making footprints, our guided hike and canoe paddled tours, which we do right here in this location in Prairie Point.
And we've been out doing a lot of bird ID training over the last few days. Do you think you're going to incorporate some bird stuff into the tours?
Definitely. Like, now that with more knowledge on specific birds, that'll help us, you know, like my connection with kingfishers. Like, you know, I tell a lot of tourists already about the kingfisher, how I utilize it for locating bait fish, which leads to bigger fish. But yes, definitely would be able to incorporate more of that knowledge into the connection to the lands with these animals.
And is there a value in tourists getting that information from you?
I think so, because a lot of our tourists ask about the cultural connectedness, even with our plants, birds, and animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's been your favorite part of this experience?
I would have to say is learning the markers, again, to help identify these birds. And a few of the discussions we've had, like last night there with, I forget what bird it was, Joe said, for the stagnant water. And that's one I do want to ask him a little bit more, because as someone being out on the land too, that likes going out, you know, just going out rough camping or picking up my pack and going out. If I ever run out of water, it'll help definitely identify stagnant water that I should stay away from.
Learning from the birds.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, you know, like life skills, survival skills that can learn from these birds as well.
Safe to say this was a really rich learning experience for all of us. I'm going to share one last clip of Joe talking about the name for turkey vulture.
We know, yeah, there's a change that it's responsible for. And we know that there's a positive change, and I guess just talking to its process, taking rotting animals and starting that, starting to clean things up. We know that it's not just like ugly. A lot of the times you'll hear that there'll be like some surface level interpretations that, you know, are good for kids. But if you think about it a little bit more, those sounds all mean something else. When all those sounds are grouped together, there's a more full story. So it could just be ugly, yeah. You could get by with that for your whole life, but when you know that it's describing the process of cleaning, then it makes a lot more sense.
Of course, I wanted to hear how this experience was from Joe's perspective, to see if he felt that the week was a success.
I think so. I think we did everything that we wanted to do, or exceeded, greatly exceeded, I think. And the experiences of this week, I think on the tour guides, one of the things that I was able to see, I guess, is it wasn't that they were so interested and obsessed and motivated and inspired by birds and bird knowledge at the end of the training. What happens, though, is you see that, just like cooking, it's like, okay, this is something that I have to learn. If I want to be responsible for recovering knowledge and transferring, delivering knowledge and dispelling some terrible ideas about indigenous knowledge and culture as a tour guide, then that's this is required. I have to learn about bird knowledge. And just because, yeah, it's required. It's just like cooking and, you know, sewing. And it's a knowledge that needs to be completely understood and exercised if we want to consider any revival, I guess, of culture and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that. They were just like, hey, this is my responsibility. I'm going to do it.
I hope you've enjoyed this little field trip up to Manitoulin Island with us. Once again, we've got that first episode with Joe. It's called Benishiek. If you want to learn more about Anishinaabe bird names, go have a listen to that. It's so interesting. And of course, a new resource is this bird name guide that Joe and Andres have put together. So far, they've created kind of like a teaser. It's just got 15 Anishinaabe bird names, but it goes into really great depth into why they're named what they are. And it's just a fantastic resource. You can purchase a copy of that on Joe's website, creatorsgardenmarket.ca. Purchasing that guide will help to fund the continued research into bird names, so you can help Joe reach that goal of creating a much bigger and more comprehensive guide. And I sure hope you're keen to visit Manitoulin Island now. I don't know why you wouldn't be. It's a lovely place. I can't recommend Wikwamekong tourism enough. The guides are so knowledgeable and also very fun to hang out with. So get up there and visit them. You'll love the lush nature and the birding that the island has to offer. Check out wikitours.com. All right, thanks, folks. It's fall migration. Get out and get birding.
Change it, Mother Nature.